The Federal Reserve is meeting next week, and officials are expected to hike interest rates yet again in their battle against inflation. Prices are up over 9% year over year, the highest level in four decades. Which leads to a question. Can the Fed really bring down inflation in the way they want to, without halting growth and sending the U.S. into a recession? It's the difference between what's known as a hard landing and a soft landing. And it's a delicate balance that economists have been debating all summer. Let's bring in two now to talk through this. Julia Coronado is an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin, McCombs School of Business, and founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Hey, Julia.
Hi.
Alex Domash is a research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. Hey, Alex.
Hi, Miles.
Thank you both for joining me. And before we get to the hard versus soft landing question, Alex, can you talk a little bit about how the Fed raising interest rates is supposed to reduce inflation?
Sure. So what's causing inflation right now is there's an excess demand given the constraints of supply in the economy. So people want to buy more goods than are currently available. And what the Fed's policy toolkit to do in this situation is to raise interest rates to both slow down business investment in the economy and to also try to slow down consumer spending and encourage consumers to save rather than then to spend their money. Basically, the idea is that this will help bring demand back in line with supply, which can help bring prices back down to the Fed's target of 2% inflation.
And Julia, is that foolproof? Like, does raising interest rates always reduce inflation?
Well, eventually it can. The question is how much. It's famously said that interest rates are a blunt tool. So the Fed doesn't have the ability to fine-tune the economy or consumer demand. So it just has to sort of feel its way to the right interest rate. And therein lies the risk of a hard landing that the Fed might overshoot or go too far, particularly since we're starting from a point where inflation is really high.
Yeah, that feels like it brings us to the, I want to say, multi-billion-dollar or trillion-dollar, whatever, however many dollars question this is, it seems like the big question. Are we headed toward a recession? And it felt like earlier this summer, there was some consensus forming that we were headed that way, and that seems a little murkier now. Julia, I want to start with you, and then I'll come to you, Alex. How likely do you think it is that we are headed toward a recession?
I think, it's very clear that the risk of a recession has risen and is higher than before, say, the war in Ukraine. The war in Ukraine brings a special kind of inflation, which doesn't come from strong demand, but comes from what we call a supply side shock. That is, there's less oil available in the global market. Oil, gas prices, and a variety of commodity and food prices have all risen. And that's a squeeze on consumer budgets. So add that to the mix, and you've got a pretty strong headwind that consumers have to absorb. So that really is one of the primary catalysts for the rising recession risks. There's still a path to a cooling in the economy and a cooling in inflation without tipping into recession. And the main support factor that argues for that is that the labor market in the U.S. is just so gosh darn strong. We haven't seen a labor market this strong since the 90s. And it really has continued to be resilient despite all of these headwinds. And that's a pretty strong base of support for the economy.
Alex, your thoughts on that question, on whether we're headed toward a recession?
Before I dive into that question, I think there's a little bit of clarification that's actually needed about what exactly do we mean by a recession? And this is something that there seems to be significant debate over and confusion, especially among a lot of people in the public. So when I and other economists are referring to a recession, we're usually talking about a significant decline in economic activity that spread broadly across the economy and that lasts for more than a few months. And so by this standard, I do not think that we are currently in a recession. But I think if you look at the historical evidence, if you look at where the economy is today, as Julia mentioned, I think there is significantly heightened risk that the economy will go into a recession in the coming, say, 12 to 18 months. One thing that we know from looking at history is that bringing down inflation without causing economic pain is a very hard thing to do. Since the 1950s, every time inflation has been above 4% and the unemployment rate has been below 4%, the U.S. economy has tipped into a recession in the next 2 years. Today, we have headline inflation that's running at 9.1%, and it's broadening across most sectors of the economy beyond just gas. The Fed is aggressively raising interest rates to slow the economy and to try to bring inflation back down to its 2% target, but it still has a very long way to go to actually bring down inflation all the way back down to 2%. Meanwhile, we're already seeing some signs of slowdown in the economy. We're seeing that GDP growth was negative in the first quarter of the year and was very likely negative again in the second quarter. We're also seeing slowdowns in consumer spending. We're seeing slowdowns in the housing market, and we're seeing a significant deterioration in consumer sentiment. And so while I agree with Julia that if you look just at the labor market does seem really strong right now, which is why, you know, from my perspective, we're not currently in a recession. But one thing about that is that typically the labor market doesn't signal that we are going into a recession until it's already too late. If you actually look at the recessions since World War II, and you look at the 6 months before a recession starts, job growth has always been positive in the 6 months leading up to every recession. And so my opinion looking at the labor market is that it doesn't tell us too much until it's already too late.
I do want to take a step back, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit, Alex, and kind of the public's understanding, and to be frank, my understanding of what a recession is, so much of it feels affected by 2008 and how catastrophic a time that was for the U.S. economy. Julia, is that what we're talking about when we talk about the U.S. heading into recession, something that looks that catastrophic?
Probably not. That was the most catastrophic recession, in many senses since World War II. And it came from a prolonged period where we had really excessive debt loads being taken on by both consumers and the banking sector. And so it was a very long and deep recession and a very slow recovery. We've had a lot of other recessions that are much shallower and shorter. And if we look at things like household balance sheets, consumers really haven't taken on a lot of debt. The housing boom we've seen has not been primarily driven by consumer debt, increasing consumer debt. It's been driven a lot by sort of investors' participation and speculation in the housing market. So we can see a correction in housing and even potentially in the broader economy without that kind of extended self-reinforcing negative feedback loop that came with the Great Recession.
Alex, I want to focus a little bit more on this idea that wage growth and how fast wages are rising over the last year can actually have a connection to pushing inflation higher. Would you be able to explain that a little bit?
Sure. So if you think of an airline, for example, and an airline is facing increases in airline fuel, this is going to cause an increase in the prices of airfare. Similarly, if flight attendants receive, you know, a 10% wage increase, oftentimes this wage growth will also be passed through to consumers. Another connection between wages and prices is wage increases are another source of an increase in aggregate demand. It's unlikely that if all workers on average are experiencing significant wage growth, that we can actually see a slowdown in aggregate demand, which is needed to bring prices back in line.
Julia, I want to give you the last word here. You've worked as an economist at the Fed, and I'm just curious, looking ahead, you know, what advice would you give to the Fed on what officials should do right now?
Well, the tricky part of the terrain that the Fed is navigating is that relationship between wages and inflation isn't at all what's driven our recent inflation dynamics. A lot of it has been disruptions associated with the pandemic. And so from one day to the next, we started buying a lot of goods and less services, and that like led to this gumming up of global supply chains. You know, what the Fed is navigating here is hoping to cool demand off enough to facilitate those supply chains, those bottlenecks easing up and the flow of goods across the global economy normalizing, and hoping that in competitive consumer goods markets, that leads to some relief on inflation. If they have to go just through the wage channel, you know, they will have to cause a recession and bring wages down to cool off inflation. But again, the hopeful path for them is that there is a cooling in demand, and that's not so much something that they can control. So they have to keep dialing the lever a bit and seeing how things play out. You know, we know that producers of consumer goods are working hard on clearing up some of these supply chain bottlenecks, but it really, it's up to the private sector's ability to do this in a timely way that will determine whether or not the Fed can ease off at some point and allow that soft landing.
Julia Coronado is an associate professor at the University of Texas at Austin McCombs School of Business, and Alex Domash, a research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. Thank you both so much for sharing your insights with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Miles.